Okay, here we are with another episode of Smart Living. I'm Daphne Monroe, and this is
Diane Brennan.
Yep, she's also your smart shopper too, but it's more smart shopping when it comes to real estate.
You know, I'm not as smart as you, but so I'm excited about this podcast because you have a lot to teach me.
Well, I may be smart, but you sure as heck are the funny one out of this one.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Okay, today's Smart Living Show is, of course, all about showing you ways and sharing ways so you can make smart choices about your life and spend your money wisely. So today we're going to talk about...
Wait, who's this?
Oh, wait, that's you right there in the background. That's Diane
Don't
Brennan.
I look exactly like that?
She has curly hair and she has straight hair.
The one thing they joke about realtors is that they leave pictures that are, you know, 10 years old. So just to let you know that I'm not breaking that trend, okay?
And same with me, by the way. Hold on. Let's show my picture right here. I know you guys that are not visually watching the show, you probably can't see. So that's about a 10-year younger picture right there, right? Cute.
Anyways, you look the same.
I know, right? We all do filters. Thank God for filters. Okay, so we're going to talk a little bit about, you've got like a buyer's guide, something about when buying real estate. You can refer to something that tells you a little bit about
buyer beware. As Arizona real estate agents, we have this fabulous resource for buyers to be able to research the communities and the areas that they are looking. Let's say you're with your realtor and you find this perfect house. The realtor can show you the comps. They can show you what's happened. This is a resource that tells you absolutely everything you need to know about buying a home in Arizona.
In that area too.
In that area. So it's got, it's my favorite resource possible.
Okay.
And it's great for people that are coming in from out of state because they tell you about our even bugs and stuff that we have in Arizona that are different.
Okay.
And it also tells you about the home buying process. But it also can tell you crime stats. It can tell you if there's any sexual predators in a neighborhood.
You're going to give the whole thing away. Just give me 1 second to wrap this up. I just want to tell people what the show is going to be about.
Look at me. I got excited.
So you're going right into the segment. Also, we're going to talk about electric vehicles. So, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that. We have the government, you know, telling us that we, you know, can't drive gas-powered cars, that we have to slowly change over to electric cars. But manufacturers, these electric cars are more money, but yeah, you could save on gas. So I found a nugget when it comes to EVs. You don't have to pay on gas, but there's something else you're going to spend an equal amount on. And that's also going to come up on today's Smart Living Show.
Interesting.
Right. And we'll just have some many money ways. So let's get the show started. Here we go. Okay, Diane. So let's get to that buyer's guide.
Okay. So the buyer's guide is something you can ask any Arizona real estate agent for this. And I'm happy to give you one. Anyone watching or listening who wants one, I'm happy to send it to you. It's absolutely a free resource. And it is one of the most important resources. It's got a whole bunch of great links to help you learn about an area, learn about what's going on in that neighborhood. It's got links to crime stats. It's got links to what our plants are like here. Mm-hmm. So if you're coming in from out of state and you have no idea about scorpions or anything like that, it gives a lot of great information on that as well.
Yeah, like scorpions.
Like scorpion. I mean, weren't you, you came from a different state, correct?
No. I've lived here for over almost 50 years.
Okay.
So I've lived here most of my life. I was born in New York, but this is my life here. So I know scorpions very well. The reason why you got that funny tone from me was because I recently purchased a house. We're sitting in the house I recently purchased and it was invaded by scorpions. I had scorpions coming out of the light socket.
After you moved in?
After we moved in.
And did the seller disclose
of
that?
Of course not. Right?
So then that's an issue that you can go take the seller.
I know. And we thought about that, but we just let it go. So, but that buyer's guide would have been probably pretty helpful because it would have told me like kind of the area in terms of like, you know, learning about the different types of insects and living over in this area. We definitely live near wildlife. We have javelina that come up our driveway. We found rattlesnakes. So that buyer's guide probably would have been a good thing to have before we brought that up.
You're living in the wild. Yes. Well, normally a seller should have filled out that information in the disclosures.
Right.
So that's unfortunate that they didn't.
Right. And it could be that they didn't have a scorpion problem. The house was a little bit empty before we moved in. I noticed that the door was left open. So that's why I didn't really go into that.
Well, let Ian tell you this about scorpions. They go in migration patterns.
Yes, they do.
Yes.
I've learned a lot
so
about
So they
them.
Didn't all of a sudden
yes.
come here.
Okay, you're right.
So
you're
forgiving
right.
people.
Yeah, I am, because I love this house. But you're absolutely right. I learned a lot about it. And I had to spend $3,000 to get a company to come in and seal the house out because it was such a severe problem. I mean, when you have scorpions coming out of your light socket, and within a few weeks of moving in here, I had already been bitten by a scorpion. So hiring that seal out company to come out, which I hated spending the $3,000, but I didn't know how else we could solve the problem, was that's where they taught us about the migration. So you need to make your house less attractive to scorpions. You're never going to get rid of them.
Well, and that's one thing that you should ask the seller is specifically about scorpions, even if they say that, because there is a question on the seller property disclosure statement. By law, every seller has to give this document to a potential buyer. And it asks on there, you know, any insects.
Right.
And if they put no, the seller could get in a lot of trouble. You could get financial compensation for that easily if you change your mind. Secondly, if they say that, ask them again.
Okay.
Have you had a scorpion problem? You know, ask your realtor to ask them, have there ever been scorpions in this house?
Huh.
Yeah.
That might be something I might think about. I'm going to chew on that.
But let's talk
a little bit more about this buyer's guide.
Sure.
So you can get, can anybody get it, or do you have to be a realtor? Because you said you'll send it out to anybody that like contacts you.
Oh, anybody can get it. Yes. Realtors have access to it. And it's one of the tools that anyone who's thinking about buying a home can get for free. And you get it through a realtor.
Okay. Now, is it specific to the area that you're buying in the valley, or is it covers the whole valley?
Well, it covers the whole valley, but it has links. So let's say there's crime stats, or you want to know how the schools are in a certain area. So it has links to specific different areas. So, you know, a good point to make for resale is how good are the schools in the area. You have children, but they're not of school age. But when you and your significant other are looking for a home, you want to think about resale value as well.
Right.
You know, are the schools good? Is this going to be attractive to a potential buyer? So you're not just thinking of how much you're going to enjoy the house, but you're thinking, you know, for resale when you decide to sell, how attractive is it going to be for someone else in terms of, you know.
So it gives you crime statistics too.
It gives you crime statistics.
So that tells you a lot about the area that you're really buying.
Yes. It also has a link to the sexual offenders website. Yeah. So you can know if there's any sexual offenders in your neighborhood, if that is a concern to you as well.
Does the buyer's guide tell you anything about in terms of the resale in the neighborhood that you're living in? Like if it's a high rentals, is it to give you like the stats
on
the property? No, just more like the schools, the crime area, like around the area that you're living in. The community.
Right. Vegetation, even in Arizona, climate, vegetation, insects, things like that. And the process of purchasing a home, and that you should be encouraged to get an inspection. It gives you really good tips as well.
I think that's great advice. And people can get it for free. They can reach out to you to do that, but it is free. So
free.
It doesn't cost anything.
No.
Okay. That's great.
If somebody's charging you, they're doing something a little funny,
but
like your sellers with the scorpions.
But they have to contact a realtor in order to get it.
Yes.
You just can't just go get it. Okay. So there you go. So you guys have to contact a realtor if you want information on that and make a wise, educated decision on the area that you're buying in. That is really key. But I will say one thing. I don't mean to go off on a tangent, but well, let's go off on a tangent. Real estate. The prices of homes. Since the pandemic, I mean, our price of homes have doubled and they're not coming down. That's a question.
We don't see that right now. So we have been in a situation where interest rates have been high.
Yeah.
You know, we were enjoying 2-4%, and now we're at the 6-8% range. So that has stopped people from buying until they get used to this kind of new normal. Where we have been fortunate, I say, because prices haven't dropped, is the fact that there's lower inventory in the valley. So low inventory combined with high interest rates means that prices are kind of stable.
Yeah, but people are actually buying.
People are buying. Yeah, they're always buying.
That's so crazy.
We're still attractive to California, where people are a little upset with the political situation in California and the expense.
Right.
So we still have Californians buying here as well as other states.
Okay.
And, you know, we'll always have the sunshine. We'll always be an attractive place to come to.
I think so. I mean, I feel like we've just been this hidden gem for 50 years. And it's just now during the pandemic, people actually discovered the amazing Arizona.
Yeah, absolutely.
State that we live in. And I will say that I remember back in the day, I don't think I've ever had a mortgage that was more than $1,000.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I've never paid more than $1,000 until I bought this house. So now I have a mortgage that's more than $1,000 a month. So.
And how does it feel?
Not fun, but I need a home to live and I wanted a beautiful home to live and I wasn't willing to compromise. I feel like we paid what this house is worth.
Well, and I have to tell the listeners, I'm going to beg Daphne for her to take you on a tour of this house for one of these shows, because it is incredible. The views, I mean, this is your dream home.
It is.
So
it
it's worth it.
Yes. And we will, because I, you know, have been advised that we're going to shoot this show at different angles of my house, because I do a lot of things in my house in terms of showing people how to save money. So thank you, Diane. Yes, you guys will get to see the views of this amazing home that we have worked very hard to obtain. So it is definitely something in the life of making smart decisions in my life it is nice to see that payoff when it came to this house.
And I think another good idea is you to talk about your real estate story, because you've been very savvy as an investor and then getting equity to buy another property and equity to buy another property. So
yeah, you know what? Let's do that right now, because I was just going to switch over to EV, but I'm stretching the time a little bit. But let's tap into that a little bit really quick.
Yeah.
This is kind of an organic show today. We decided that since Diane is here, we're going to tape another show. So that's what we're doing. So yeah, that's true. So when I was going through a divorce, before I got a divorce, I was, you know, married, and I thought I was going to be married forever. Well, one of the things I did was I was working in television, and I wasn't making a lot of money when I first started out. And I realized I was married to a man that wasn't going to work. So I had to make some smart financial decisions. So what I did was every time I got a raise, I bought a house.
Love it.
So some people, when they get a raise, they go out and buy themselves a new car. Well, I got a raise and I go buy a house. And so that really was like kind of like my side hustle. So I was always worried, like, I have a mouth on me, just in case you're wondering sometimes. And sometimes I'm not good with authority. So that's why I always had a backup when I have a job, because I'm always worried I'm going to get fired or something. So when the real estate crisis hit in 2008, everybody was sitting around kind of like scratching their heads. Well, people were still buying homes, but they were so cheap. I mean, it was like Disneyland
for Yeah.
me. I mean, I bought a house like near Paradise Valley for $100,000. I bought a condo in Flagstaff for $100,000. This is in 2008. You know that they're worth a lot more now. So these were some smart moves. I got lucky.
Well, and kudos to you for understanding how important real estate can be in helping your bottom line and helping your financial picture. So most people were so frightened when the market crashed. You looked at it as an opportunity to buy, which is key.
Oh my God. It was like, that was a time, 2008, I saw the pages changing. I saw wealthy people not being so wealthy, and people who are smart with their money became wealthy.
Absolutely.
The tables changed, and I saw it and I took advantage of it.
So did you just, when you got a raise with your job, were you just buying, that was the down payment, and then
yeah.
you had renters
yes.
paying for the rest of it?
Thank you for asking for the clarification on that. So every time I got a raise, you know, I was also a saver, but it was enough. Now, Grant, this is 2008. So like to buy a $100,000 home, you really only needed like $10,000 or $20,000 to put down on that. So it wasn't a lot of money. But I took advantage of that because I was saving money. I'm a saver. So I'm like, this is the time to start spending some money and take a risk. So I bought a house over, like, the first one I bought was over near 28th Street in Cactus. And it was a house that was almost not sellable because I guess the people lost their home and they went in and they thrashed the house and they took out the toilet. So it was considered a house that they wouldn't put a mortgage on. So we had to sneak in and put a toilet in so we could get a mortgage on the house.
Okay. Any of the ideas expressed on the show is not necessarily
full disclosure.
Not anything that we condone you to
right.
do.
Well, you got to do what you got to do, but
sure.
they would give me a mortgage. So we had to go in and put a toilet
wow.
in. So
wow.
we did. And then we got the mortgage on that house. And I think I put just like $20,000 down, but the mortgage was nothing.
Yeah.
So like the mortgage was like $800 a month, but I was able to find a renter for $1,400 a month. So that was $600 profit net that I was making on top of the salary I was making. And then I bought another house in Flagstaff. I found a condo really, really cheap. And this was another one of those situations where... Just the down payment.
That's
and I
key.
I purchased that for $108,000 and I put a down payment on that. So like it was like $20,000. And I was able to finance down. And that, I used that property because I was a hardcore runner then. So I would rent it out to college kids for 9 months out of the year. And then, but they would have to... I made them sign a lease for a year, but they would be gone for the summer and they knew that I would live at the house in the suburb. So I would
perfect.
Run up there. It worked out perfect. But I've since then sold all these properties that I'm talking about for profit, and I've bought other properties with that. And that's the discipline. So why I was able to leave a high paying job was because I had income coming in from my rental properties.
Love it.
And that side hustle has given me the freedom to do things like this. Like I want to start a podcast right now, right? Okay, well, right now, you got to find sponsors. You got to find money. So there's a period of time where I'm going without making money, but I have income coming in for another aspect. And that is one of the smartest things I have ever done in my entire life. I listened to my dad.
Good for you. Mm-hmm. Awesome. That is a great way to do things. And to encourage other women to be able to buy investment properties, you don't need to spend $100,000. You just need that down payment. Someone else is going to pay your mortgage for you.
Right. And you have to just sit down and do a mathematical equation. I mean, it comes down to a mathematical equation. You have to make sure that your mortgage is less than what you can rent it out for. Period.
And did you ever use any of your equity to put a down payment on another house?
No, I never did.
Okay, but you can. That's an option.
Yeah, I mean, you can leverage your money, you know, use your money. One of the things that my dad, he's probably one of the best money advisors, he's now deceased, but he gave me some really, really important advice as a child. And one of it is that if you have money, keep it in the bank, make sure you got enough. So let's say I bought a house for $150,000. This is my dad's philosophy. Make sure you have $150,000 saved up in the bank, but don't use your money. Go get a mortgage and put a mortgage on that. But if something happens, you can pay off that house. Now, that's a pretty ambitious goal. I mean, having $150,000 saved up when you're like in your 30s is pretty hard to do.
But it gets your mindset to saving, which is important.
So what that told me was, don't put myself in debt. So what it said was, save as much as your salary that you can. And that enabled that. So, and by the way, just to let you know, I've never had $150,000 sitting in the bank. I most certainly didn't have it when I was 30 years old. But what little money I was able to save, I leveraged that and went and put a down payment, then borrowed it from the bank. And then I would have my renters paying my mortgage while I was also profiting. Then when I was done with that, or I felt that the house, you know, got enough equity in it, I would sell it and use that equity solely to go buy other houses. So now I own two properties over by Phoenix Children's Hospital. I used to Airbnb them out, but now I have two full-time renters in there, and that property is really earning me some good income.
Awesome.
Yeah.
So. And now a lot of people listening or watching could be saying, well, what if you buy too many and then the crash happened? I think that you had a manageable amount, and with the advice of your dad too in your mind, you didn't go out and get too much.
Right. And I'm not like, I'm ambitious in the sense that my ambition goes as far as I just want to make sure that I have the basic things that I need. I don't want to have to be robbing Peter to pay Paul to keep a roof over my head.
Yeah.
So for me, my ambition only goes as far as, okay, I can take care of myself and then I want to play. And
yeah.
And I don't want to work after that. Right. So, but there are people who see things greater than I do and have a larger real estate portfolio. But for me as an individual, I also manage all my own rental properties too, because I have the time and the freedom to do that. And I enjoy that. So I like, not that I have relationships with my renters, but it is intimate in the sense that I'm the one that's going over there to do the repairs. So, and that saves me money too.
You're doing the repairs?
I do.
This woman. That's amazing.
Yes. So Diane, we're really talking about real estate on this show today. So being that you are a realtor, are you staying busy? Are you finding homes for clients?
Yeah. I mean, I've been blessed that I have clients still. This year has been tough with the high interest rates. Things have kind of been at a standstill and with inventory low. But yeah, there's still deals being had and still homes being bought and homes being sold. So people's, just because the market changes doesn't mean that people's lives align with that.
Right.
If people need to move, then they need to move. People need to buy, then they need to buy.
Right.
So,
okay, I'm going to throw something at you here for a loop. Okay, so being that you are a single woman, and by the way, Diane's single, and she's currently looking for someone to date. She's looking for someone who's going to be of equal status as her.
I'm on a podcast asking for a date.
But we're turning it into a dating show too. But besides that, the point is that you're independent, right?
Mm-hmm.
So being that you've been self-employed most of your life, what are ways that you manage your money to make sure that your bills are paid? Because you don't have anybody.
Well, you have to do the old 6 months worth of saving, especially in real estate. It's commission based. So you're grinding all the time.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a little exhausting. It's a matter of save.
So that's what you do. So let's say, for example, you sold a house and you made some good money. So you know you have that discipline. So let's say you made like $20,000 commission. You have that discipline to know that you have to put a portion of that away.
For taxes, number one.
Number one.
Yeah,
okay.
Number two. And did I have the knowledge? I learned by trial and error,
right,
let's say
all?
That. Yes,
by
and every realtor will tell you that. They didn't save enough for taxes and then they got, you know, squeezed at the end of the year. So it's been a discipline that I've come to learn in order to be able to survive in this business,
okay.
For sure. Because it could be feast or famine in real estate. And we've seen the cycles change, so things can change.
Absolutely true. Okay, I'm going to shift gears a little bit, and we're going to talk about, you're going to see back here, this graphic's going to change here, but we're going to talk a little bit about...
Who is this cute guy that keeps coming up? So we can...
That's Eric, our financial guy.
But so you can watch Eric on episode one.
Right, on episode one, if you want to watch him. But right here, this is my car, and I'm showing you a picture of these tires right here, because they're worn out. So what the deal is with that is, back in the day, I bought an EV car about 2 years ago, and okay. it's a BMW i3. BMW discontinued making it in 2021. Reason why I decided to buy an electric vehicle is because of gas prices. I mean, they were like $4 or $5 a gallon. I had enough. So this car was used. It was 2 years used. I bought it for $28,000. I thought that was a reasonable price. I did a lot of research. It doesn't have a high extending rate, meaning that I only get about 120 miles, electric miles out of it.
Okay.
But I don't drive that much. So it's perfect for me. So here I am driving my car. I bought it. It's totally affordable. I never have to go to the gas station. I'm super excited. And then like last year around January 2023, I need to get new tires, but it's the first time I ever bought tires for the car because I just bought the car. So I'd have had the car for like a year and a half prior to that. So no big deal, but I was like, wow, my car only takes one tire. Only one tire manufacturer makes tires for my BMW i3, and it's Bridgestone. I can't get a Continental. I can't get an off-brand. I can't get anything. I'm beholden to Bridgestone. Whatever amount of money they want to charge for those tires, I have to pay for it. $1,600 later is what I got for four tires put on at Discount Tires. So that's fine. You know, I'm like, okay, well, that's just the price you have to pay. You want a BMW, you know, whatever. So I sucked it up and paid the price. Come February 2024, just 13 months later, I had a little flat in my tire. It was a slow leak. So I go to Discount Tires. I'm like, I got my tires from there. I know they'll fix it. So I go there. They look at my tire. Then they roll down my window and they say, we can't fix your tire. I said, why? They go, because it's bald. Like, not bald, but it's in the red. So there's green, which is good. Yellow is not so good. And then there's green, which is red, which is bad. So they're like, we can't fix it when it's in the red. And I go, but I just got these tires. They're like, I know. And it's both back tires. Okay, so I pull up. I go to the guy inside Discount Tires. He pulls up my record. I only got 10,000 miles on those tires. The two back tires completely were in the red, and the two front tires are in the yellow. They will need to be changed out in a couple months. So being that I am the smart shopper and I'm a smart consumer, I was like, you have to call Bridgestone. This is ridiculous. I got only 10,000 miles. Even the guy at Discount was like, yeah, you only got 10,000 miles.
And what is the usual amount of miles?
That's a great question. Just to establish that most vehicles' tires are rated between 30,000 to 50,000 miles is what they usually get. But these specific Bridgestone tires are not even rated, meaning that they don't have a warranty on them. So not only do I have to buy Bridgestone, they won't warranty these particular tires. And my car takes different size tires. So the back tires and the front tires are different, so you can't rotate them. So you can't give them more life. And I have regenerative braking. I won't go into that too much if you people aren't EV drivers. But regenerative braking is basically, I don't have to put my foot on the brake to stop my car. It automatically slows itself down once I take my foot off the gas. But that process is happening towards my rear tires, so causing more wear and tear.
This is not an endorsement for the BMW.
No, not at all. I still love the car, but here's what I found out. I was so disturbed by that. And by the way, on a side note, Bridgestone did give me a discount. The guy over at Daniel at Discount Tire, he made sure to call them. I ended up getting all four of those tires for $840, and they're going to install them for free. But I told Daniel at Discount Tires that now we're going to reestablish a relationship because basically every year I have to get new tires. There's nothing I can do about it. So that's the catch, guys. So when I did more research and I started talking to more people when it came to Teslas, a lot of Tesla drivers have to change out their tires between a year and year and a half. I went on Reddit and looked at some different blogs. So that's the catch with EVs. So you save on the gas, but you have to afford for every year or year and a half. You're going to have to get four new tires.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah,
and
so that's the catch.
We're not going to talk about when you need a new battery.
Well, the batteries, okay, so that's a whole other story, but that's also part of the maintenance. Like, so when you have an electric car, you don't have to worry so much about the motor, right? So you have less in like brakes and oil and things like that I save on. I'm still saving money on gas because it's every year to year and a half I'm having to buy new tires, which is about what it would cost for me to fill my car with gas, about $1,000 to $1,400 a year. But at the same time, I'm getting additional. So I'm still getting savings on the EV car, but that's the catch, guys. You have to buy more new tires. Plus, the battery weighs more. Those cars weigh more, so the rubber is not holding more. So that's really it. So I'm going to, I think we've got another question here. You got something you wanted to mention. I was going to wrap this up here in a little bit, but that's it with the EVs there.
And then what about the charger in the house?
Well, the charger in the house is pretty cheap to install.
So oh, it is.
Well, it depends. So what the house that I bought already had an existing external electric charger. But what it, the catch is that if you want to get a faster charger, you have to get a 220 volt, which plugs in like it's a washer. It's a washer plug. So it's a brighter plug. So you have to hire an electrician. It depends on the cost of that. It can cost you anywhere from $500 to $1,000. It just depends on what they have to tap into to get the electric there, where you want it at. So you have to afford for that. But it's not, it's part of the cost of buying an electric car. But you can also, there's a lot of places you can get your car charged for free. It just depends on the convenience that you have. But it is something that's another factor that you should consider.
And if you charge at home, how much does your electric bill go up?
That's a good one. I have solar, I can't answer that, but it's not much.
It's not?
No, a lot of people, a lot of conspiracy theorists like my brother seem to think that it's going to increase your electric bill by $1,000. It's not.
I thought it was like $200 or $300.
It could be. I don't want to say yes for sure. I don't feel like everybody has different electric plans. Some people have solar. It depends on what electric plan you're on. So if you're off or on, you know, when peak hours, it depends. But I would say, yeah, factor in about $100.
Call the electric company.
Yeah, but it's not, before you buy. It's not an extreme thing here.
Okay.
It's not an extreme thing here like a lot of people think it is. So, but again, the catch is, it is the tires. And I would say, you know, the cost of putting in an electric charger, that's a factor that you have to consider, $1,000 factor too. So, but for me, it works out. I'm not going to trade in my car for a gas car. I also am somebody, I hate going to buy gas.
Yeah, I think that's a girl thing.
I don't have to do that.
We definitely don't like doing
that. You don't have to do that.
For sure. So, and then changing the oil, oh my goodness.
So that's another wrap, you guys. You can catch all of my content on Smart Shopper Daphne. That's where my blog is. That's where you'll find the show. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Spotify. Plus, watch me on social media. I always have a great story. I'll, you know, have a story about Evie on my social media platforms. And as you can see, we talked about it more here. So thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next time on Smart Living. This is Diane Brennan. I'm Daphne Monroe, your Smart Shopper. Have a fantastic week.